Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, British lady, and welcome to Pop Culture Stars for 8/10/22. I am your hostess with the mostest, Dave Atwill, coming to you this evening from balmy, sticky, cookie Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hope everybody listening is doing fantastic this evening. So, going to move right into an exciting show tonight. Right off the bat, pass it around to my esteemed panel as I light up my delicious cigar from Godfather Cigars. And I'm actually going to have a malt beverage tonight, despite having to work outdoors tomorrow in this heat. I'm going to go ahead and have a couple drinks because we're having an abbreviated day. I'm going to take advantage of it. So, moving on to our panel, returning to us after a short absence, trying to take care of some business at the house in that fine state of Arkansas, Granny Hulkster. How are you doing, young lady?
Well, I'm well. I've been busy. Glad to be back. Had a fun weekend at Wrestling for a Cause, and they had a big, huge show, and the money that they raised went to help an organization called the Northeast Oklahoma Veterans Freedom Tour. So all the money that WFC raised that weekend went to that organization to help their veterans do their freedom tours at no cost to them, which I thought was pretty cool. We had EC3 there and James Storm there, and Granny got to slap James Storm twice on his face. I'll tell a little bit more about that later in the show.
Now, wait a minute. We know you really slapped his cheek.
No, I did. I slapped his face. I mean, I slapped his face. No, I slapped his face because he grabbed my bag of potato chips that I had laying on the table because we had rented we had reserved a front row VIP table because this is my birthday month, guys, you know, so this was a little special celebration. So he grabbed my chips and he barely picked up the bag of chips and he crushed the chips. And when he crushed the chips, the bag popped open. Well, it exploded and the potato chips went all over the table. So my good friend Sam Stackhouse that he was wrestling against comes up behind him and taps him on the shoulder. And Sam says, go away, ref. You know, he thought he was a referee. And Sam tapped him again. And he says, go away, ref. And James turns around and Sam grabs him and hauls off and hits him. And then he turns him around. He says, okay, Granny, do your thing. And I slapped him once. And the crowd went wild, and everybody started chanting, Granny, Granny. And Sam says, one more time. And he did it again. I got to slap him again. I said, that's for destroying my bag of potato chips.
That's when you sat down and said, keep my wife's name out your effing mouth.
But, no, it was a good show. It was an awesome show. And I actually have a good friend that goes to WFC that added a little extra name to my name besides Granny Hulkster. Would you all like to know what that is?
Was it NWO Wolfpack or what?
No. It's the godmother of wrestling.
Ah, very good.
He started calling me the godmother of wrestling. I think I'm going to have that made into a shirt. You know, Granny Hulkster, the godmother of wrestling. I think I'm going to have that done. So,
outstanding. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. Sounds like you had a blast. Good to have you back. That is faux show. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Now I'm going to kick it over to the fine city of Indianapolis and the outlying regions of that area to where those alpacas chill. Tim, what's going on?
What is shaking? Yeah, you were talking about a heat wave earlier, or talking about how hot it is, and it actually cooled down quite a bit. It was an enjoyable day as I was able to pull myself out of the seventh circle of hell or I'm sorry, when I got off work today, I was able to make it outside for a bit and enjoy the cooler weather. So I'm sure Todd maybe is enjoying that too. So, yeah, but looking forward to some more awesome conversation. I was going to – dang it, I already can't remember what I was going to say. Something about picking on Todd. You said something about Todd and it sparked a light bulb, but now I can't recall it. So we'll have to save that. Maybe it'll come to my head.
You've been rocking on me the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, it'll come back to me. So anyway, looking forward to a great show as usual. And I know we're going to have some continued conversation from last week, so I'm game.
Yeah, outstanding. Well, it's great to have you aboard. And no sooner did you mention something about the cooler weather, this steady wind has picked up here all of a sudden. And I said, what? Damn if it don't feel right good. So, yeah, appreciate you bringing on a little cold gust of wind from up north for me. Much needed. Good to have you aboard.
Oh, we know Tim. We know Tim blows.
At least it wasn't hot air. That's a good thing. So, as he no sooner speaks, my anchor man and good brother, Todd, talk to me.
I'm sitting here doing outstanding supernatural, ecstatic to be here. Man, stuff be a blur. I don't know. I think I'm pretty close to my 40 hours for the week already.
Jesus.
That's kind of the way it is.
Yay, grief.
It's just the way it is. Please, I can't say I'm bored.
Yeah.
Really. And for the record, since Tim decided he wanted to go and take some shots at me, he wedged in a couple over the course of the week when somebody referenced one of the teammates that started calling me work dad because she's known me for so long, so obviously she became work daughter, and I just call her WD. And Tim was like, yeah, it's more like he's work grandfather. And, you know, just... Oh yeah, don't worry. It was just people from all over the country on the phone call. It's all good.
Here, let me help you across the street. Get them that discounted dinner, damn it. Outstanding. Well, definitely great to have you aboard this evening. Looking forward to a great show. And before we kick things off, I got to say that if you listen to the show regularly, you know Dr. John is real big into the cryptid scene and all that. And
you're going to bring this up?
Yeah, man, that nobody has ever found any Bigfoot poop, but apparently there is a gentleman in Australia who found a giant loaf laying in Australia in the woods somewhere, and he thought it was snake poop. No shit. This guy, in his inquisitive nature, touched said piece of dookie and found that it was warm, thereby eliminating any type of amphibian / reptile who might have discharged said loaf. So he immediately thought it was the excrement of a yowie, which is the Australian word for Bigfoot. So, do we know for a fact that it was a Bigfoot turd? We do not know. But
apparently a Bigfoot does shit in the woods.
Yeah, that's true. Does a bear shit in the woods? Yeah. We got a little bit of evidence on the bear thing, but, you know, still trying to find some big fetus poo-poo is pretty monumental. So, interesting stuff. We'll have to touch on
big
this later.
Big poo monumental. Nice.
Thank you. Another touch.
Got to go with this. So, as the Latin phrase feces occurs, we now know that shit happens.
That is correct. And apparently this guy knows his shit. So good to see it all falling into place after so many years of me carrying on about never seeing a dead Bigfoot or a Bigfoot poop. So that's another show. Nevertheless, our good brother Todd had a fantastic idea for a show last week. So I am going to drop back for a screen to him and expect him to run it all the way down for the big six touchdown points. But Todd was speaking
on...
Did
you just say I was going down on what?
Hey, can you run?
All right, Well, in some of our movie conversations, we started touching on, like, the various effects. And we know that flickers have been on for a while now. And the variation of effects use, and it's well over a century now, if you stop and you think about that, let that freaking play with your little brain housing group. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Some stuff's amazingly creative. We know that people had done the, oh my God, remember some of the old B-movies? Zoom, go back, zoom, go back, zoom, go back in a scene and stuff like that. All kinds of nifty stuff in effect. So it was like, and now we know pretty much everything's heavily CGI driven. Some of that's definitely better than others. We just wanted to play with that stuff. Because stop and think, just a few things off the top of my head from claymation, the stop motion, the blue screen backgrounds and stuff with the, you know, from the having the suits to miniaturize stuff going on to just, yeah, it's all been there. The different, now there have been over the years, man, some of those companies that do it, you see it by Toho and a bunch of those, some of the best model makers on the planet, just saying. So go! And tree frogs. Close enough to produce.
Well, let's start it off with King Kong, all right? Which,
yes,
if you watch the original King Kong now, to me, it still stands up. I think it's still, despite the advances of CGI and green screen and all that kind of, if you watch the original King Kong, I mean, granted, there's a couple hokey things in there, like the hand that comes in the window and grabs, you know, that's a bit much. But when it comes down to the stop motion stuff, it's still pretty stout, still pretty good. So my thing about it is, could you imagine, I from time to time brag on the fact that I've been able to watch every Star Wars film in the theater on opening day, with the exception of the first film. I was kind of like 2 weeks behind on that one. But the experience of going there, the experience, the excitement, the people dressed up, it's an event, and it was an experience. And I wish I could go back in time and be a cockroach on the wall in the movie theater on opening night for King Kong and watching these people just absolutely soil their knickers watching this show. Because,
yeah,
I remember, what was that? That was released, what, in 30? 28, 30, wasn't it?
Somewhere around there. Stop and you think, it wasn't just the Kong effects, the models that were going on. Remember the set models involved.
Right.
As well as the things like the airplanes, the other monsters involved, there's the trees, there's the buildings. It's just amazing, mind-boggling.
And
if you've ever seen any of the stuff, and let's face it, that movie inspired Ray Harryhausen so much he became the king of that stuff.
It was 1933, Dave.
Okay, good.
Very good. Thank you, Grant.
I had 34 I looked it up.
It was 1933.
Oh, bull, you were there at the first screening.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't born until 62, guys. Oh, well. I wasn't even around in 1933. Yeah, I was born in 1962.
Called really like Grant.
I don't know.
That is so wrong. But gosh, that means we're coming up on what, 90? Next year will be 90-year anniversary of that film? Holy balls, man.
And you realize that's probably the longest running chain, maybe some of the Dracula stuff, because Nosferatu came out out a long time ago too, and the old vampire flicks have been around for a while. So yeah, the amazing how monsters have been a theme from early on. Stop motion model building. Pow. Pow. And just think, that inspired Ray Harryhausen and everything Harryhausen gave us over the years.
Now, another old flick, and I use the term old flick, I'm, going back 30s, 40s type thing. The first, to my knowledge, Titanic flick that came out. There was a film called A Night to Remember, and it was about the sinking of the Titanic. And granted, you watch it now, and it's some kid playing in a tub with a Titanic, pushing it around, and it hits a little plastic iceberg and that kind of iffy stuff. But that thing actually showed the boat going down and people rowing away from it and the whole damn nine yards. And again, people have become, what's the word they use now, disensitized, I guess.
Desensitized.
Yeah, to a lot of this stuff. When you see stuff now, it doesn't affect you like it used to. But I got to think, man, these people are in the movie theater and they're watching this ship go down. And if this thing was made in the 40s, you're only 30 years out of the actual event itself.
Fairly fresh in the memory, yeah.
Yeah, man. So it had to have been pretty hairy. And again, for a film that was, made in the ballpark of World War II, for them to be able to get a chilling effect as they did with that film, it speaks a lot. And it might not speak much for the filmmaking as much for me as it speaks about the imagination, how somebody actually said, how can we do this,
Yeah, and they had limited tools back in the day.
Absolutely.
Okay, now you want to talk about something that had some really, my mind, outstanding freaking makeup. And it was outstanding on so many levels. But some very cool effects was The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah. When was that movie made?
Yep.
Got to be right there around 30-ish as well.
Yeah, I would think.
Now, I remember from being a kid how cool it was, obviously, watching the movie go from black and white to color. What I can't remember, and the only reason I'm really ashamed that I can't remember, is because I know I learned about the different time frames for different things to, the different milestones of this kind of technology when I took radio TV in high school. But
1939.
So was this one of the first color movies, or was there anything before it?
There was color before it. I'm sure there was color before it, but you stop and you think everything they did, the effects of the Twister are still solid, still legit. You look at that, and it's like, man, that could be going on in the background. yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, even the. Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, like,
now,
the witch flying around.
This might be interesting.
Jobs.
1908, a visit to the seaside. Eight minute British short film. Process capture a series of shots from Brighton, South England seafront.
Papa Stroh's in the queue.
Yeah, I gotcha. I'm going there and let him in. If y'all be so kind as to carry on without me.
Yeah, I'm sitting here now, a list of early color feature films, Wikipedia, 1903, some frog film. Looks like it's a Passion of Christ, a variation of that. With our king and queen through India, The Miracle, 1912, all that. Then there was, I think one of the search options was like first color movie with sound. One now it's showing saying something that's like from 1902. That's crazy. That's amazing. And just what they were using to film back in the day, I remember kind of tripping, speaking of a special effect, trying to understand how the film was faster to create slow motion. How are you going fast to go slow? And it was just the whole more frames per second, so if you the shooting process, so that when they played it at regular speed, it slowed everything down. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, and you think about, I'm trying to figure out what time frame sound and that kind of things would have come into play, because then you can go back to, I have to admit, I don't think I've really ever seen any full films. I think Charlie Chaplin was big before they ever had that, and you had the subtitles.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember Laurel and Hardy were doing silent flicks, too.
Ah, interesting. I don't think I knew that.
Buster Keaton, probably my favorite silent comedic actor. He was doing his own stunts, speaking of special effects.
Well, I was going to say, I can't speak to any special effects back then. I guess I was kind of more or less taking on the historical aspect of when, you know, timeline and when things came into play. I'll tell you what I can remember. I can remember seeing reruns of, and I guess as we talk about, you know, CGI and the progression, I guess you could, if you take in the direction that I'm going in by stepping back, it's almost like it gives the appreciation of things and what they tried to achieve, because now it's so easy, you don't have to use your imagination at all. You can just be kind of dumb because they do it for you. There's CGI, there's special effects, they can do anything, and it's just it's a given, you know, it's expected. You go to the theater, and if they didn't have that, you'd be like, well, that was a gif, you know, but back in the day, they really had to work to try to pull you in. I can remember seeing, and I believe it was a TV series, obviously way before my time. I don't know. Maybe I was watching Nick at Night and I saw it. But they had an old Superman show that was black and white. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I watched that thing, and I never saw the dude fly. I saw him, like, I think he did one of those tricks where he jumps from the room to make it look like he had been flying somewhere. But it was more or less him kind of, you know, acting as a detective from what I can remember. We are going years back that I actually saw it on TV. But,
man, was that old boy that committed suicide? Those that I'm talking about?
I don't know.
He was murdered. George Reeves.
Okay.
Yeah, he was murdered under mysterious circumstances. Apparently he was having an affair with a married woman and yak, and apparently there was a handful of people that had it out for him, and still to this day, it's kind of like the Bob Crane thing. Nobody really knows what all came of it. But apparently he had enough people pissed off in the area to where when he got done in, everybody just kind of did the oh well cuz, and they eventually gave up on it. But the cool thing about the old George Reeves Superman was that when you had the bad guy shooting at him, and he'd stand there with his chest poked out because the bullets would bounce off his chest, and then the bad guy run out of bullets, and he'd click it empty a couple times, and then he'd throw the gun at Superman, and Superman would duck.
That's awesome.
It's like, yeah, dude, take the bullets in the chest, but whatever you do, don't hit me with that gun, please.
That's awesome.
Look for it. Whenever you're watching that stuff, it's awesome. Because the guy, you know, he's got the whole mobster hat thing going on, and he's, you know, got a little snub nose 38, and he's bam, bam, empties the whole thing out and does the click, 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 and gets that aw shit look on his face, throws it, Superman ducks. Gotta look out for that flying iron now. Don't want to get hit with that. Good shit.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
So, Strove, appreciate you joining us this evening, brother. What is going on in Stroville?
Oh, a lot going on. It's been a while. Been a minute. Are you guys doing good? Yeah, I heard you guys talking about silent movies earlier and all that, and special effects and CGI. I don't know if you guys had brought this up, but what about the Ten Commandments and the special effects for that film? I mean, a film that's way ahead of their time, man. It still blows my mind for that time period what they pulled off.
Even the water, what he's parting the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The plate stuff, the staffs turning into snakes, the man, yep. Yeah, just the pillar of fire. There was a ton of stuff in that movie. Absolute epic. Yep. Good call, Strove.
Charlton Heston went up to Mount Sinai and came back with the tablets and that boss tan. And and you're watching, you're like, damn, man, this is pretty heavy stuff. And little did you know, because the Ten Commandments, is it still played on network TV every Easter?
It used to be. I mean, that's when I recall it.
Yeah, because it's like a 4-hour film. Yeah.
Right.
And, it's one of those movies that, when you're a child, at least ways in my household, my folks, there were certain films that were watched on particular times of the year for particular reasons. And, Easter, Ten Commandments was always the one that mom and dad were watching. And, when you're 5-6 years old, you're too busy, with your coloring book and your Star Wars guys messing around with that to really worry about it. And one year I started actually watching this. I want to say I was probably in the ballpark 7-8 years old. And it had to have been after Star Wars, because Star Wars is when I really hit my stride about watching movies. But I remember watching that. And like I said, Charlton Heston comes back looking all baked. And what was so heavy about it is that as a kid, this is all stuff that I was learning about at Vacation Bible School and that kind of stuff. And they tell you the stories and they read scripture to you, and you're a 5-year-old kid going, when do we get to the macaroni art? But then to actually see the shit on the screen and putting in the damn, lamb's blood over the doors and, the locusts and the toads, and you're like, holy balls, man, that is pretty strong stuff. And still to this day, it holds up. Like you said, when they split the Red Sea, you've got to kind of stand there and you're like, damn. All right. They have actually found chariots at the bottom of that body of water.
Yeah, it wasn't strictly speaking the Red Sea, whatever, but they found a particular area where there's been some really cool, let's do the path, let's find what is the particular Mount Sinai where all this stuff happened, and they found some just outrageous stuff. But yes, all the way to the point, because they were trying to figure this stuff out, how did this really happen, and you know, we think this place, because why else would there be these chariots? Mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, I can see finding wrecked chariots somewhere, like, you know, in the mountains or the plains or something like that, but laying at the bottom of the ocean? What the hell are they doing out there? So, I don't know. It's something to behold, but yeah, good call on that, Stro, because that one definitely, and the amount of, and that's another thing about CGI that is so different than what the movies were when you speak about stop motion or some of the earlier, it's not green screen, not stop motion, but when they filter in the effects. God, I can't remember the trade name for it, but nevertheless, the amount of manpower.
Yeah.
That,
okay. Same movie. Manpower? How about when they were raising that obelisk?
Yeah. Was that the one you hit?
It sure reminds me of it. But when you look and know about that stinking obelisk, or, you know, that scene that they did, wait a minute, because there was some serious manpower involved.
Yes. And, you know, you're talking about extras and all that. One of the things they did in the Phantom Menace during the pod racing scene, one of the things they did that I wasn't aware of until I watched, you know, a behind-the-scenes thing on it, is that they took Q-tips and tongue depressors and that kind of stuff and painted them randomly and stuck them in the little town setup, the little Bunta Eve setup thing that they did. And you're going, wow, you know, it looked like all these aliens out there and they're all goddamn Q-tips. But when you watch movies like Cleopatra or Ten Commandments, when you see asses in the crowd, those are people. You know, if you look at, you know, you speak on Wizard of Oz, you look at all those damn munchkins, those were people. That wasn't some CGI where you get, you know, a dozen of them and then you just kind of, you know, tap them in the back. That was an awful lot of damn management when it comes down to just head counts.
You know what else is people?
And you know what else, Dave? You know what else?
People.
A lot of those actors that played the munchkins also had a dual role and played the part of the winged monkeys, too.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I'd just like to have that on your resume. Yeah, I played a... played the Lollipop Kids and played a winged monkey.
All right.
Well,
the,
look at Frank Morgan.
Over.
He played, look at the wizard. He had five parts that he played in that movie.
Really?
Frank Morgan had five different roles he played in that movie.
Well, who all were they? I know one of them would have been
he played Professor Marvel. He played Professor Marvel. He also, of course, he played the wizard. He played the cabbie with the horse of a different color. Then he also played the doorman where he says, "Who rang that bell?" But I can't remember what the fifth one was that he played, but
damn, no
kidding. You know, want to know what's funny? You were talking about Q-tips. being used in that movie, and it made me think of just something a little bit interesting as we talk about special effects. And I don't know if anyone's had the opportunity to make it to Universal Studios. And I did, and they had, at the time, there was an Alfred Hitchcock the area that you could go into. It was like its own building or something. I don't even know if it's still there, because we're talking, I was a teenager. So it was a good 20 years ago that I went there. But they kind of gave you like a behind-the-scenes type of thing.
Boy, you were fast with your math.
And they were just showing how they accomplished different things and whatnot. And they took a Murder, She Wrote scene, and they used audience participation, and they brought some people up, and they basically removed all the sound from the show. They're like, we're going to demonstrate how you can basically achieve the same sound effects, you know, because we don't actually film these things in a restaurant, you know, whatever, with all that. And that's what it was. It was a restaurant scene. So Angela Lansbury is sitting there at a table in a restaurant talking to somebody else. And we basically created all the background noise. And so he had a couple people up there, and they were like, you know, messing with different chimes and things to do the metal, like the Civil War clanging together. And my favorite part was he said, all right, now when I count to three, I want the entire audience to just go walla, 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 walla. And we did that for like 10 seconds or so. And when we did it, they recorded it, and they softened it and played it back. And I shit you not, it sounded just like background chatter of a restaurant. It was amazing what they were able to do just with, you know, people doing random things like that. Outstanding.
That's wild. It's funny how they're able to come up with a lot of these different sound effects and all that kind of jazz. I mean, to give you a one I picked up this week, I'm pressure washing bleachers at a local high school here, and they're metal. And I was using the big 4,000 PSI machine we have that has a metal fiber hose to it. It's a rubber hose, but it has a metal a mesh. It almost looks like a giant stent. If you ever had a family member that's had a stent put in, you know what one of these things look like. And it looks just like a giant stent is what this pressure hose looks like. Well, when this giant pressure hose hits the metal deck of these bleachers, it makes the most wicked lightsaber sound. Like you've never... So me and Rob are stretching the hose out, and when it hit, we both just stopped and looked up at one another. I mean, we were good, you know, 20 feet apart from one another, and we just looked up at one another like, shit, you hear that? We're like, do it again, man. We sat out there.
That's the only time you're going to be allowed to talk about stretching your hose, by the way.
That's right, and having lightsaber sounds with it. So, my shorts is bigger than yours. But, yeah, I mean, if you think about not only, you know, and Todd, it's a good call on topic matter because this thing can go in all directions. If you can think about all the stuff that goes into it and the reaction that you get from it is a whole different. And I'll give an example of that is just recently Rogue One. Okay, when I was watching Rogue One, which I'm here to tell you, I love that movie. If you ask me the best Star Wars movie, I'd instantly tell you Empire. But second is either got to be A New Hope or Rogue One. Rogue One was just awesome. Anyhow, they had Peter Cushing in it. And Peter Cushing, for me, Tarkin, is one of the most lost characters in Star Wars. I mean, I wish they would come up with a series or a movie about Tarkin, because Tarkin was just a business guy, man. He didn't bullshit around with anything. I mean, he's the guy when Vader's choking out that one guy on the Imperial round table there. And Tarkin's like, Vader, knock it off. Vader stops. Tarkin was the guy who ordered Alderaan getting blown up. Tarkin is no shit. And the whole time I'm watching this movie, I'm like, damn, whoever in the hell they got playing Peter Cushing is a spitting image of this dude, man. The voice, everything. So then later on, I find out that it was CGI'd, Peter Cushing, in that film, and I'm like, wow. You know, y'all had me. You landed the hook on my ass on that one because, I mean, it was just the, and it put so much into that movie because it showed you some of the inner workings of the ego and the power struggle of the Imperial hierarchy. And being able to see Peter Cushing play Tarkin again, I mean, you got to remember he blew up on the Death Star, so, I mean, spoiler alert, it was 77 since we saw Tarkin played by Peter Cushing. And now here we are, you know, what was it, 2015, I think, when Rogue One come out, and you're just like, damn, this is out of control. What else
so
can
I
they do?
I got a question for you. Off of that, I got a Star Wars question for you, and it's something because you're a bigger fan than I am, but it's a genuine question, and I've kind of always wondered, just not enough to really look it up, but the Emperor, because you were bringing up a good point about, you know, lookalikes, whatever. When I saw the Emperor in, I guess it would have been episode 3, when he finally, you know, completely turns Anakin into Vader, the Emperor had a striking resemblance to the Emperor from, you know, 70s or 80s, whenever, I'm trying to think of what that one, wouldn't have been Return of the Jedi, right? When was the Emperor's first appearance then? Was that New Hope?
Empire Strikes Back.
Was it Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, 14 miles of the hologram,
so,
yeah.
I always thought that there was a striking resemblance between the two, and I'm sure that it's not obviously the same actor, so I didn't know if maybe I was just kind of off, or if they did some kind of CGI there, or if it was just, you know, they did a really good makeup job. So do you, what's the answer on that?
Yeah, you are partially correct. What it is in the original cut of the Empire Strikes Back, they had that hologram sequence when Vader went in there and talked to Sidious or the Palpatine, and the guy who did it wasn't, the actor's name is not Ian McDiarmid. Who in the hell, never mind, whoever the actor was, it wasn't him, and that was actually the first appearance of the Emperor. Now, when Phantom Menace came out and we started getting the inner workings of how Palpatine was working the shit behind the scenes, when George Lucas re-released The Empire in one of his special edition things, he's done so many different editions of it, what he did is he took the actor, and I feel horrible because I can't remember the guy's name, but anyhow, they took the actor who played Palpatine in the prequels and they redid that scene. And instead of putting up the guy with the lumpy eye and the goofy look in the hologram, they put a picture, or they put a hologram of Palpatine. So,
gotcha.
They kind of updated, what they had set forth. Now, I will say, the same guy who played the Emperor in Return of the Jedi was the same guy who came back 15 years later and played Palpatine in Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. So it's the same guy.
you know what I would have loved to see, honestly, at the end of Return of the Jedi, which, according to the Mandela Effect people, and I believe the Mandela Effect, originally they said Revenge of the Jedi, but it's Return of the Jedi. It's a little needy,
right?
Maybe a thing, right? Well, check this out. What I would love to see at the end of Return of the Jedi, when everybody, they're all celebrating, the Empire went down, right? And the Ewoks.
I know where he's going with this. I know where you're going with this.
Partying up and, you know, enjoying it. The whole universe is like enjoying themselves and they're celebrating. Luke looks on and sees the Force ghost, right?
Yep.
And you see Anakin, you see Ben, you see Yoda, right, on one side. I would have loved to see, check this out, I would have loved to see on the other side of him the Dark Force ghost of the Emperor and Darth Vader giving him the middle finger.
And here I thought you were just going to tie back to Anakin being changed.
Yeah. Can you imagine Darth Vader and the Emperor showing up Force ghost giving them the middle finger?
Yeah. Moving his ass or something. Yeah.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. Oh, that was tremendous.
But they're on love it. Now that's a good call right there, is that in some cases the CGI stuff can actually ruin a film. I mean,
right.
I mean, Todd, what do you think on that? I know your wheels are turning like mine are when it comes down to that.
I remember we were at Cherry Point, and some of the, let's face it, there's I don't know, some people are churning out stuff so fast, quality takes a backseat. Some people are churning out stuff cheapest possible way, and the quality matches the cost. And there, I'm not saying that there's not some things that haven't had a massive budget that have been solid. But there are just some things, maybe it's because the story was cool, seemed overrated to me in the CGI. I remember where we were at Cherry Point, they were all like, you got to see Anaconda, you got to see Anaconda. And I was like, God, oh, CGI sucks all the way through. I just couldn't get past that. I could not.
Yeah.
I mean, there were parts in the story that made me giggle and, you know, okay, you know, this dramatic, that kind of stuff. But it was just... the CGI was so bad I couldn't deal with it. I've got to assume, because I'm one of those ones that haven't watched any variations of these, I got to assume that's a family of Sharknado.
Oh, wow. Sharknado, where the shark gets on the roller coaster and just keeps rolling back and forth until he finally gets launched up in the air.
I take Sharknado personally as a guy with a couple of published novels. I would love to see my novel hit the big screen, but in the meantime, they're too busy making Sharknado flicks to do anything with my shit. I get a little salty about it, just a little bit.
Yours, Chrissy's, you know, Bill stuff. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, there's material out there that they can work with if they allow it to happen. You don't have to put sharks in tornadoes and do it five or six times over. No less.
You know, so that's, yeah, that's some of the things that are done. Didn't you see other sides that they, you know, they go out of their way to do things good. You know, some of the newer, the effects into some of the newer Star Trek stuff have been pretty impressive. The, we've seen some neat stuff in some of the, Marvel universe. We've seen some of that stuff that could have been better. Some of the, and it seemed like some of the smaller stuff, like the CGI support that was used for some of the, like, the Netflix Marvel series.
Yeah.
You know, they use that to help them with some stuff. Here you are, something that was geared for the small screen, if you will. Although I don't think the big screen anymore really, and small screen really makes a statement considering how big the screens are that people have at home now. Just saying, that's a game changer because I think some of us remember TV cabinets that could double as a dining room table and didn't really have a very big screen. The viewing screen just wasn't all that. But there's been some cool stuff. I just think that CGI, people are coming in. I think Tim kind of touched on it there, and you did as well. People become so reliant on it that we can bedazzle them with some stuff, and it's like a lot of the video games, if you will. They're using the same graphics engine that creativity's getting killed. It really is. You think something that did not have the biggest budget, help me out here, you ain't leading but two things, Jack and shit. Jack just left town. Whole series of them. Army of Darkness.
Yeah, Matt. What a film.
Right? And, you know, it's kind of cool, that did the skeletons and stuff in that is the guy that got such a big name working with Walking Dead for the effects. But, yeah, that was... The effects in that were freaking, God, they were fun. From the miniature versions of old boy out down the line, it was freaking great. Yeah.
Wow.
I tell you one that used to turn me on all the time when I was a kid, and I guess kind of gave me the affinity for the monster thing and all that, you know, nowadays, the old drive-in movie theater with the old Sinbad flicks. Remember the Sinbad flicks where they, Dude, I mean, they had some of the coolest Cyclops, Minotaur, all that kind of stuff, man. And you're like,
Sabretooth Tiger,
hell,
you name it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Sometimes.
Yep, which is, I think Harryhausen, that was him again.
Oh, really? Because the CGI doesn't have to be polished to make an impact. And a good example of that is the original Conan movie. When James Earl Jones turned into a snake, that was some pretty busted effects. But you're watching this guy turn into a freaking snake. And back in 1980, whenever the hell that came out, you're just standing there, and you're, you know, your jaw's going through the damn floor. And you're like, holy shit, this is wicked as hell, man. You know,
great line in that when old girl came back as a ghost. Do you want to live forever?
One of my favorite parts of that movie was when... And any guy who's been out on a date with a chick that went totally psycho on him gets it. But Arnold's sitting there in front of the fireplace, and old girl starts riding his junk. He's having a time of his life, and she's going, Zamora. And I'm like, yeah, man, all right, get into it. Chick goes into total demon mode, and he throws the bitch to the fire. Why didn't I ever use that move? For crying out loud, I could have saved myself a lot of damn heartache. If she starts acting crazy in bed, throw her in the fire.
But, yeah, that, so here we go. I pulled up Ray Harryhausen, visual effects, 17 credits. Start from the beginning. Tulips Shall Grow. Mighty Joe Young, 49.
Okay.
Beast for 20,000 Fathoms. Came from Beneath the Sea. Earth vs. the Flying Saucers. And what, here's another one of his great monsters, 20 Million Miles to Earth. The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
There you go.
The Three Worlds of Gulliver. Mysterious Islands. And this might be my favorite, Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, yeah.
First Men on the Moon. 1 Million Years B.C. The Valley of Guanji, kind of cool Western dinosaur thing going on there. The Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Sinbad in the Eye of the Tiger. Clash of the Titans, of course. And he was a consultant on the 1998 Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, Mighty Joe Young was good. Now, if you go through the trouble of watching The Son of King Kong, if you want to see a bad movie
in the day.
Yeah, if you want to appreciate how bad a movie can get, watch Son of King Kong. It's amazing how the same people together such a masterpiece like the original King Kong can just totally shit the bed like they did with Son of Kong.
That is where we can sit there and go with sequels that, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, it's almost like they stepped backwards in the effects, too. When you watch the effects, they weren't nearly as polished as the original King Kong was. And, it was just way off the mark. But, I'm telling you, I keep thinking about all the stuff I used to watch as a kid, because it was when I was a kid is when things really started, the interest in this kind of, which, leads us to this point right here of us here on Pop Culture Stars. You remember the old Land of the Lost with the damn slee stacks and all that?
Yeah!
Mm-hmm.
Those were decent dinosaurs. Those were not horrible.
Yeah. And in the 70s,
Alice was the Allosaurus.
Yeah.
And
the Rex
was whoever, and they were always arguing over the little opposite sides of the little the gorge.
Yeah.
And sit there and holler.
And then they go into the light up rocks where the slee stacks would come out and everything. And you got to remember in the 70s, that's all we had. I mean, that's the thing about Jurassic Park that makes such an impact on entertainment alone is the fact that, all kids dig dinosaurs. It's a given. Hell, I'm 52. I still like dinosaurs, right? So prior to Jurassic Park, all you had to fall back on was Land of the Lost when it comes down to dinosaur stuff.
Yeah,
when you're
in the lizard,
man, that was all
the lizard people in the canyons. The lizard people in the game.
So when Jurassic Park came out, not only was it a masterpiece, I still think Jurassic Park was just off the charts good. But, it was actually the first time we got to see a dinosaur get it on in, real, believable, dead-on-balls type of thing, because that whole sequence with the damn Tyrannosaurus, still to this day, when Sam Neill's out there waving a flare back and forth and that thing starts charging that Jeep, I'm telling you, man, that is, and if you ever went to go see it in the theater, my God, you could feel the vibration. Every time that damn Tyrannosaurus took a step, your seat vibrated. Because of the damn...
Oh, boy, those are impact tremors. I'm getting fairly alarmed here. The,
It's crazy.
Yeah.
man. Ton of good flicks and stuff we're talking about with the special effects. And I would be horribly remiss if I didn't talk about why Toho Studios went the opposite way. First looking at some of the stop-action stuff. They even apparently threw inquiries at Harryhausen and stuff. But they found out, A, cost, and B, time involved to get through the projects. So they went to doing the suits, back to the model building, the various tanks and everything. Dude, could you imagine getting paid to be in that suit and wreck that town? How fun would that
be? Oh, yeah.
But some of the monsters and some of that stuff were just, I mean, look, if anybody's seen, I don't care what anybody says, to me, the original Godzilla might still be the absolute, actually the second Godzilla, the one that's done, because the first one did not have, it's Gojira, did not have, oh shit, Perry Mason, help me out, guys.
No,
Perry
Mason.
Raymond
Burr. Raymond Burr?
Yeah,
Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr. He was, of course, not in that, and that's how they modified it for American release, was to put him in there and all that kind of stuff. People can talk smack about the dubbing. But that first brief shot of Godzilla over the edge of the mountain on the island and the tail dragging and the footsteps going back to the ocean.
That was, yeah, nice.
Yeah, the sense of, it was, and I'm not talking about the black and white and not brightly lighted black and white. I'm talking about, because that island scene was bright, talking about how the theme was dark, foreboding. It was intense. Next closest thing was the original Rodan movie. That was, and even
oh,
at the
yeah.
end of that Rodan movie, those that watch it, you know, when the second Rodan decided to go down with the first in the volcano, but the scenes of the dude that was terrified from watching the egg hatch in those little, and the giant insects and all that stuff, it was, that stuff was amazing. And what they were doing with the, and I guess back then those were the blue screen, if you will. I think we call everything green screen now, somewhere down the line that changed. But they would do the, you know, they would blow that stuff up and the angles for the people running away and all that kind of stuff. And the other batches of costumes, I don't want to forget, guys, are things like the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, classic. Yeah.
Classic. I was going to say Raymond Burr almost won an Oscar for that Godzilla movie, actually, that year.
Yeah.
But because it was a quote-unquote Godzilla movie.
Well, did part of that still have to do with the hate with Japan post-World War II stuff?
Yeah. There was a lot going on then. Why he didn't get the Oscar.
There was a lot.
He almost did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you stop and you think about that. And, of course, Godzilla's come so far. They've done, you know, they got some really cornball things. They've got, they started doing a lot of messaging and stuff like that through the flicks.
So you mentioned, you mentioned costumes, Todd.
Yeah.
Sorry. Now, I was going to say one thing that always stuck out, and when I was a youngster, I had to leave the room when it would be on TV. It was just that creepy, and I haven't seen it in a long time, but please tell me one of you remembers B, stood for, I think, visitors.
Oh, yes. And remember the Jewish guy in the series that B for victory?
Yeah, and they would like peel off their skin to reveal that they were basically reptiles, right? Below, they were listening.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing, was feeding off of people. But every time they peeled off their skin and showed, you know, what they really were, I had to leave the room. I mean, it creeped me out.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking I mean, it was already, we're not talking like ancient history here. It was probably what, Stro, 80s? I think it was probably early 80s. You know, but still, that left an impression, man. I mean,
one of my favorite actors was in it. Mark Singer, who played Beastmaster, was in it.
And
they rebooted it also at one point. And I tell you what, man, I want to go through. Boy, that kind of stuck me when you started going back with some old. A couple things jumped into my head. Anybody remember the made-for-TV movie Gargoyles?
Oh yeah,
sounds familiar.
It's boy, you're digging deep when you reach for that one. But boy, that one scared the bejesus out of me when I was little, right? And of course, then of course I'm there in the Marine Corps and I'm stationed in the high desert. Oh, good grief! Sitting there in the high desert, you know, seeing some of those places around there. And we went to this one little town that was like no bigger than that little cornball town that was filmed in. I was like, yo, boy. Now, I think maybe underrated, I really like two of the stories for sure. Struggle with the third one because I can't even remember it. So since I can't remember it, maybe it wasn't that good. How about the effects in the Trilogy of Terror? Anybody remember that one? Karen Black, anyone?
Oh,
negative.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. Now you said Karen Black. I can vaguely remember that one.
That little tiny doll?
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like, don't remove the bracelet or whatever. And oh, my God. That thing. In the end, she threw it in the oven and frickin' roasted it and all that, but it was too late, bit her and affected her and all that. And heat change at the end, and she basically was turning into a human version. It was just, man, there was some stuff where they did, obviously not the biggest budget thing, and they didn't kill themselves on it. They did some simple stuff. But, man, it made an impact.
So what about Poltergeist? That one scared the crap out of me, and we're talking, I think that had some pretty decent special effects in that one.
Poltergeist.
I still get the heebie-jeebies watching that thing.
One of the scariest parts of that film was, remember when she fell in that mud puddle full of dead bodies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Unreal.
Yep. I don't know. Those
were
throwing his face
dead
off.
Bodies, too. Those were actual donor cadavers that they threw in that damn thing with Jo Beth Williams, and she didn't know about
God.
It. Until after. Yeah.
Yikes.
You're killing me. That's, I hadn't heard that, and that's just, see, that's right up there with what old boy, somebody mentioned him earlier, the Hitchcock move.
Yeah.
That's right up there with the Hitchcock move where he threw old girl in the room with the real birds.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. And then we were talking last week about The Shining, another one where they were a little abusive to the one of the lead roles there. They messed that girl up when they did The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was not okay after that movie.
No.
Yeah, that they did in damn Hong Kong Phooey in that flick.
Oh, Scatman Crothers, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Soleil. I'll tell you what, man.
Zephyrson, Soleil.
But the impact those things had... And then you talk about, like, practical special effects with, like, you look at Rocky, all right? You know, we're finding out now, 30, 40 years later, that Sylvester Stallone was actually in there getting the living shit beat out of him, where he was telling these guys, hit me. You know, actually punch me in the damn ribs. And, you know, so now knowing that, you know, when you watch Rocky, which, again, the first Rocky has got to be one of the most flawless movies ever made. That's another one that I give a lot of credit to for just being just epic from start to finish. Now, granted, you know, the subsequent movies weren't as masterful, but when you look at the practical effects, I mean, Carl Weathers and Sylvester Stallone were in that ring beating the damn piss out of one another. And what was it for? It was for effect. It was to get us on the edge of our seat. It was to make us go, damn. And still to this day, I think Rocky came out in 77. And still to this day, or 76 maybe, I can watch that first movie. And that fight at the end, you're like, holy balls, man. It's everything. And you'll, of course, there was makeup in there. But you got to remember, you got to wonder how much of it was actually makeup and how much of it was actually real thing if they were in there.
Well, it's not sure if they'd have done the scene in one deal or whatever, but yeah, the, you know, did he get a black eye, and were they trying to, you know, were they like, okay, we don't need makeup for that, we can have him fight with the black eye at this point, then trying to figure this stuff out type deal. The, practical makeup, the, see, still a special effect. Ah! Special effect, Platoon.
Another great flick.
Defoe.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe. That whole scene where he got shot and they were doing it and the way he went down, it did not work effects-wise the way it's supposed to. But they kept it because they felt he could never recapture what he did there if all the stuff showing him getting shot happened, you know, the little mini explosives or whatever with the dye packets.
Yeah.
So that's just, yeah. The, you know, then there were movies that were supposed to be about those special effects. FX that never came close.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you, you were talking about movies. I think Tim was talking about movies that kind of got him in the gut. You guys remember David Naughton? He was on that sitcom, Making It. They used to come on in the...
American Werewolf in London guy?
Yes.
Is that him?
Yeah, dude, okay. When he turns into the werewolf, I watched that movie when I was 10. And I watched that shit, and I was like, God. I mean, it was one of those ones where, and that was post the Jaws incident at the house. So after the Jaws incident, I always made sure that if I got scared as a kid, I didn't let my dad know about it. But, I'm telling you what.
The scariest scene in Jaws by far was when that head popped out of the boat when old boy was down there diving.
That's the one that got me.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how many seats got ruined in the theater with that one.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, I know one seat that got ruined.
did you know the lady actress that was the lead lady actress that was in American Werewolf in London, she was also the lead lady actress in Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I remember that movie. That was an interesting...
Yeah.
Logan's Run was a pretty interesting concept where the human population expanded so much that they put in effect that between 30, you were euthanized.
Yeah.
And,
I tell you what.
You remember the nurse, right?
We already know.
London. That's her.
Our current government would never go for that. Just saying.
Of course not. Yeah.
You would never hire anybody that age to do certain things, but apparently we can elect them. Back to Werewolves of London. I remember that was such a big deal for that whole werewolf scene, the way they created it, the mechanics and all that stuff involved with it. It was, and the way they were able to pretty damn seamlessly go from the dude and effects on him and him moving around and all that stuff. The Dr. Pepper dude. And,
that was it.
To the mechanical part where they were doing it. And
I can't think of her name, but look her up next time. But she was the nurse in American Werewolf from London. The one that was
I know who you're talking about. I just can't place the damn.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you're talking about. And, you know, the effect on that really wasn't repeated until Jeff Goldblum turned into a fly. And
a fly.
What was
oh
it, like
God. 80,
88, 89 when the fly came out?
Yeah.
Grumble fly.
Right.
Oh, my God. That was another one, dude. I remember going to the theater to see that. And I was like, I'm sitting there trying to be all cool because I got my squeeze with me. And I'm watching. I'm like, God, this is screwed up. Why didn't I take her to a damn, 16 candles, for Christ's sake? Why did I make this? I mean, God.
Didn't his wife at the time, Gina, or girlfriend, Gina, what's the actress, Gina, she was in,
League of Women and all that, Thelma and Louise.
But she not,
Gina,
was she in The Fly too with him?
I can't remember.
I wasn't sure if she was or not.
I can't remember. She was damn on par, though, back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Gina.
That was her last name.
Totally. Yeah, I'm getting so bad with names. And, you know, it's funny. I used to always pride myself on the ability of remembering people's names. And even people's mm-hmm. families' names, you know, I can remember kids' names and everything. Hey, how's Sammy doing?
She was in Beetlejuice also. She was also in Beetlejuice, too.
Gina, not Gina Gershon, who is fine as hell. Gina Davis. There you go. Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
That's it. Gina Davis. Beetlejuice was another one.
I actually, not a big Alec Baldwin guy. But God, he and Gina Davis were great together in that flick, and he was actually pretty good as damn in The Hunt for Red October.
That was good. Yeah.
Yep.
Great book. I feel like we could do a dozens of these with the different effects. So, Beetlejuice, the effects in that, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Kidding me? Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Beetlejuice
When it comes down, speaking of Alec Baldwin, it come to mind, imagine this, Westerns. If you watch some of the old Westerns, even though they still rate and they're still good, the way the guys used to shoot their guns, where they kind of like point it and shoot it, if you watch Westerns now, and I always go back to The Unforgiven, because The Unforgiven is another one of those flicks that I say is flawless. From start to finish, that movie is beyond masterpiece, man. As a matter of fact, as we speak, I have the DVD in my laptop, and it stays in there all the time. And whenever I'm in the mood, I turn it on. I just turn it on for background because, I mean, it's such a great flick. And you watch that thing, and the way they're handling the firearms, the effect of the firearms, it's just so spot on. And it shows how far that the Westerns have come. And truth be told, I'm kind of scared that, you know, we keep having all these mobsters pass away this year. And, you know, you're wondering, God, you know, what are we going to do when De Niro and Pesci and those guys pass on? What are we going to do when Clint passes on, for Christ's sake? I mean, you want to talk about a guy that can put on
Clint,
a Western.
Clint, let's go back sci-fi. It was one of the Earth vs. the Giant Spider, or one of those ones with the giant tarantula where the scientists did the stuff out in the desert. He was actually one of his first little tiny teeny weeny bit roles. He was a pilot in the jets that came in and bombed it and killed it.
Really?
Yeah,
for crying out loud.
I wanted to hit on Sniper. Some of the bullets. I don't know if anyone was big into that one. I enjoyed it.
Tom Berenger.
Yeah, there you go. But I got a kick out of the way they did the bullet shots. That is kind of similar to, didn't Robin Hood with Kevin Costner, kind of the same thing where it was doing like the angle of the bullet and then it would show it in, you know, there was one, it was like a slow motion, but I don't know. I got a kick out of that one. I don't know.
Like
that kind of birthed a whole new concept to special effects.
Okay, Western, it was about the Cole Younger gang. It had the brothers, the family of brothers in there. There was the
Long Riders.
Yes.
Long Riders.
The sound, effects with the rounds and
brothers.
All that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That was another heavy movie for its time. When that thing first came out, you know, that was those ones that you watch and you weren't used to seeing. You know, when you were watching Westerns, you were used to seeing Gene Autry, the Lone Ranger, Clayton Moore, that kind of stuff. And then when the Long Riders came out, you watched that and you're like, ooh, shit, this is pretty deep. I mean, it still holds up to this day. I watched it not long ago.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
Because you had the Carradine brothers, you had
The Keach brothers.
And the Quaid brothers, I believe, too.
Yep. You want to talk about spot-on casting? I mean, they killed that one. Yeah, that was a great flick. Well, man, as much as I hate like hell to do it, because we are on a roll.
Dude, I can see a repeat calling.
Yeah. It's getting close to that time, and yeah, maybe perhaps we touch on this again next week. I mean, hell, we've only scratched the surface.
That's kind of funny. I saw Tim post the time, and all I could think of was 222. Is Tim talking about room 222? I don't remember a lot of special effects, but I do remember Karen Valentine.
Because we haven't even touched on Planet of the Apes, one of my favorite flicks.
Nope. Legendary.
Yeah. The amount of practical effects that went into that, between the makeup and just the set.
Oh my God, we can talk about this, how much makeup has changed over the decades. Oh my God,
oh,
yes. All right, all right, stop. Focus. We got to go around. Everybody say their goodbyes and stuff. Quick, Dave, run it.
Absolutely.
We are in
We're
so much trouble here.
Like I always do with the busiest guy on the planet, our good brother Stro. Talk to me. What you got going on, young man?
Well, tomorrow night, WCW Retro, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on VSNation.com. We'll be talking Big Boss Man. A.K.A. Big Bubba Rogers. So if you got a cool Big Boss Man, Big Bubba Rogers
story,
please call in. It should be a lot of fun. And then Friday night, the Stro Zone at midnight Eastern Standard Time on Facebook.com/StroTheMaestro. The feature will be the Wasp Woman from back in the day. So please do that.
Going back. I like it.
And then Saturday's going to be a busy day. I'm going to be at the Greenville, North Carolina Comic-Con during the day. Starting at 10 a.m. at the Greenville Convention Center in Greenville, North Carolina. And then that night, I'll be doing commentary for Shockwave Wrestling Fight TV at the Fairgrounds in Newburgh, North Carolina. So if you guys in the area, we're both, come check us out. And then I have a new horror sci-fi comedy series premiering in the fall called Stroh Sinister Cinema. You can check out the teaser trailer for it now on YouTube. Just look for the three
Saw
S's.
It.
Stroh
like
Sinister
it.
Cinema. And yeah, it was a lot of fun
great.
To film. A lot of along the lines of Elvira and Tales from the Crypt and all that. So it was a lot of fun to shoot. So I hope people have half as fun watching as we did filming it. So it was great.
Cool.
And then I got a spy series coming out in the fall called Hybrid, which I play two different characters in the series. So I'll keep you guys posted on that. It's called Hybrid. So it'll be out soon. So, but yeah, thank you for having me. It's always a good time.
Outstanding. Appreciate you joining us this evening. Absolutely, man. Good to have you aboard. So, Tim, or better yet, hold up, Tim. Ladies first. We're going to kick it over there to Granny Holster.
What? It's confusing when you said ladies first and you said not Tim.
Well, I, you know, my goodbye, you know, my parting words aren't nearly as exciting as Papa Stroh's is, you know, but I just hope that everybody has a great week and just be good to each other and, you know, just love each other and take care of each other, take care of your families, you know, so.
Most definitely. Appreciate that. And like I said, hopefully things continue to level off for you and everything. I know you've had your hands full and all, and good to have you back. Certainly.
Thank you.
And, pretty soon, we got the granny roast coming up.
We're not going to do no granny roast this year. We're going to bypass the granny roast this year, guys.
I didn't know about the granny roast. That's awesome.
The granny roast,
you were
too.
Part of that last year, Stroh, if I remember correctly. You were part of that last year for my birthday.
Oh, that was awesome.
You know. So we can just bypass the granny roast this year. Yeah, well, we can bypass the granny roast.
She does.
This year.
She will,
We don't have to do this.
She will take donations of PolyGrip.
I don't even use PolyGrip, Todd. I don't like PolyGrip.
It depends.
I use Fix-It-In. I don't use PolyGrip.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fix-It-In. Oh, my God, it's freaking great.
But, Granny, it was great to have you aboard the table.
Stroh, I don't know if you were on when I was saying I have a kind of a new name besides Granny Hulkster. I am now known as the godmother of wrestling.
See, I knew she was NWO, guys. I knew
no,
it.
I wasn't NWO.
I knew
no, 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 no NWO.
Godmother of wrestling screams NWO.
No, my friend gave me that title Saturday night at WFC. He said, I think you should be called the Granny Hulkster, the godmother of wrestling. That's what, you know, he came up with.
Your friend knows. We all know.
I'm not NWO, though, Stroh, you know, so.
Yeah.
Moving it right along.
What are you doing on your website?
Hoes nationwide. It's pimping and
easy.
Come on, Tim. Tim,
NGO,
come on, Tim. Say your party word. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not, guys. Moving along, Tim.
My kids are starting school tomorrow, so I'm getting them all ready. That's why I wasn't much very talkative in the green room earlier. I was kind of worrying on getting their stuff all situated. Other than that, it's business as usual. Just taking care of things around the house, doing the Tim thing, and that's all I got. Over to you, Todd.
Outstanding. Lord have mercy, man.
Now that the ladies are done, take care of yourselves. Care of your family. Take care of one another. Man, it's been a minute since we've had this many of us on together. Really awesome.
Yeah.
I love how people kicked in. It's just, what an eclectic group. Love it. Thank you all. Thanks for, it's been a rough week. You've been a bright, shining beacon. Thanks.
Outstanding. Yeah, it's good to have everybody together and having the show we did tonight. We definitely a home run, in my opinion, man. Well done on all parts. And I'm sure we can carry this one on in the other episodes because, I mean, it's been fun thinking about all the stuff I used to watch back in the day. So, yeah, good call, man. Well done. Now, my thing real quick, as always, the Hunger series on Amazon by yours truly. And if you get on Etsy, I am right there at Geek Cave Creations doing some stuff. You can decorate your house if you don't want to decorate your house with pictures of flowers and kitty cats and you want to put up a picture of, say, Batman or Wolverine or maybe Darth Maul. I'm your guy. I'm actually painting porcelain tile now.
I know Dell complains about the way you paint the porcelain at the house.
Yeah, that stuff right there I try to clean up. But the tile is actually, it was on a whim where I was in Lowe's one afternoon picking up some stuff, and I saw some clearance on some unfinished porcelain tile pieces. How's that? Hell, 78 cents. Take those home, see if I can paint something. And, I mean, had the best time painting the stuff. So pretty soon I will have those tile pieces put on the shop, too. So if you would, if you're in the mood for some decor, take a look at Geek Cave Creations. God, I wish I had come up with a different name that I can actually say for Etsy. Nevertheless, and lastly, not far from now, Stro, myself, and several others will be at the Jacksonville Minicon, Lion Eyes Games, New River Shopping Center, Saturday, September 10th. Again, it's a warm-up for the upcoming Havelock and Jacksonville show coming up in the future. But it's going to be a free event. Just need everybody to show up, hang out, shoot the breeze, shake some hands, take some selfies and everything. Buy a book. If you got a, you know, I know a guy that's struggling, that can, you know, struggling author, can use your help. Buy a book. But, yeah, we'll be down there having a good time. And like I said, getting things cooked up because Lord knows we got a busy second half of 2022 and a busy first half of 2023. And as Stro alluded to, the Greenville Comic Con, that thing has just turned into an absolute beast. So that's another one of those ones. Get a chance, go on out there, shake Stro's hand. Great show. It's getting better and better every year. And I think Dr. John is on track right now to bring the cons back to Onslow County. And we're looking, I say Onslow County, that and Craven County, or better yet, Craven County, not Carteret. But we're looking at Havelock, New Bern, and Jacksonville, two in Jacksonville. So, you know, the ability to have a con in the immediate area quarterly is pretty damn cool. So as we circle the wagons and get all of our gang together to join us in February, September 10th, Jacksonville Minicon is kind of just a warm-up to get things rolling, get the excitement installed, and get everybody in the mood. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a busy second half. So with all that being said, thank you.
Just real quick, I'll throw this out. How awesome is it that the cons are happening? We're hearing not just that they're starting again, but what they're bringing to the table, how good they are. So, man, it's so good. Not that a con is anything normal, because you meet a lot of Abby Normal at those things, which is why we have them and go to them. But, man, so happy to see that. Just saying.
And, you know, speaking from the other side of the table, it's fun, and as Stro, I'm sure you can probably add to it. is that it's just good to get back into the groove with it, because every con for us is kind of like a family gathering, you know, where we don't see each other every day of the week, but at the cons we see each other and we become family. And before you know it, you know, you're helping each other set up, you know, you're seeing each other's kids, they're getting taller, they're getting bigger, they're getting, you know, more outgoing and everything, and it's just amazing to have that luxury of having an event in place where every couple months you get to see these people and break bread with them and watch the success. We've talked about it on the show a million times, share success. When you guys win, we all win. And it's just real, real, real fun getting those things back in gear, man. So, yeah, good call, Todd. So with all that being said, I am going to put out the bug candle, and then I'm going to fight the janky door here at the back of Atwell Manor. Ease on over to the laptop and hope Spectrum has some live internet, in which I can put an end to tonight's broadcast. Here we go. Come on, luck be a lady tonight. Show me some internet. Oh, we got internet. All right, so with all that being said, British lady, put an end to this madness, and we hope everybody has a wonderful evening. Thank you again for joining us here at Pop Culture Stars. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
Be talking.
All right, where you
Where's
at?
That